The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. We're coming to the end of 2019, and before we start, I want to thank everyone out there, all our listeners, all of our guests, all of our friends and family. Thank you for your support. Dear listener, you make it all worth it. Now, let's get on with the show. Friends of mine, I do have friends, you know. Yeah. Friends of mine at the Rights Reporter Foundation in Hungary have a project called Drug Reporter. You can find them at drugreporter.net. Peter Sarosi and Isvan Gabor are civil and human rights activists who have been recording and producing videos for years now on drug policy, human rights, and harm reduction. They have a video series called Just Say No. That's no as in K-N-O-W, and it's brilliant. Fortunately, they license their content via Creative Commons and allow reuse with attribution. So, right now, let's hear from Drug Reporter. This is part one of Just Say No. What are drugs?
What are drugs? This question seems to be self-evident, but you will soon realize it is more complicated than you thought. When people think about drugs, they usually associate to plants, pills, injections, liquids or powders. But actually these are only the forms in which drugs are used. They don't tell much about what drugs really are and how are they different from other things such as bread or tomato. According to the broad definition, drugs can be everything that change how your body works. Some drugs are psychoactive. That means that they alter how your brain and mind works. They are like keys that fit into special locks in your nerve cells called receptors. This way, psychoactive drugs activate or block the release of certain molecules produced by our body, which change our mood, our perception, and our behavior. However, there are a whole lot of other things that can change our mood and perception, such as eating foods, falling in love, or even riding a bicycle. That's why people can get addicted to certain behaviors or even to people. Drugs can be sorted into different categories according to how they change our mind. Stimulant drugs, such as cocaine or amphetamine, increase our energy and alertness. Depressant drugs, such as alcohol or heroin, repress our arousal and stimulation. Psychedelic drugs, such as LSD or mushroom, change the ordinary way how we perceive reality and can trigger mystical experiences. However, the lines are not always clear-cut. For example, alcohol can act both as a depressant and a stimulant. What's really important to understand is that even the same drugs can act in very different ways depending on three factors: set, setting, and dose. Set is your mental and physical condition, your expectations, and your mindset. Setting is the environment in which you use drugs, including the people with whom you use drugs. Dose is how much drugs you use. Even one of these factors can make the least harmful substance becoming lethal. For example, water can be toxic if you drink too much. The ancient Greeks knew this. Their word for drug, pharmakos, means both medicine and poison. It was also the name of a human scapegoat, which was sacrificed to purify the community from its sins. So the meaning of drugs has been ambiguous from the ancient times. Today, most drugs can be used for both medicinal and recreational purposes. For example, cannabis as a medicine can treat sclerosis multiplex, but it can also help you to relax after a hard day. MDMA can be used to treat post-traumatic stress disorder, but when it's used by young people at dance festivals, it's called ecstasy and it's considered a dangerous illegal drug. The molecular structure of Adderall, a medication widely used to treat young people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, is very similar to a street drug called ICE methamphetamine, which is an illegal drug and its users are criminalized. So the difference again is not in the molecular structure of drugs, but how we people perceive these drugs and how we use them. Many people think that illegal drugs are more dangerous than legal drugs, but this is not the case. Professor David Nutt and his colleagues assessed the risks of 20 popular illegal and legal substances. They found that some legal substances, such as tobacco or alcohol, were among the most harmful substances, while Some illegal substances such as cannabis or ecstasy were among the least harmful substances. So if it is not about the risks, why some drugs are legal and others are illegal. In the next video, we will tell you the story. Please stay with us on Drug Reporter, follow us on Twitter and on Facebook.
Now for part two, why are some drugs illegal?
Have you ever wondered why some drugs are illegal and others are not? Because illegal drugs are more dangerous, you may think, but you are wrong. It is important to understand that the legal status of a drug has nothing to do with the risk it carries. Although mind-altering substances are as old as human civilization and they are known to virtually all cultures in the world, the attitudes to drugs and drug users have been changing throughout history. Only a few people know that when coffee arrived to Europe, it was banned by many European countries. For example, in 1623, Murad IV, the ruler of the Ottoman Empire, banned coffee drinking and established a system to punish its users. Gustav III, the king of Sweden, also banned the drinking of coffee and tea because of excesses and misuse of drinking of coffee and tea. When tobacco, a plant native to America, arrived to Europe in the 16th century, it was also banned in most European countries. Pipe smoking was not only punishable by death, but it was declared an evil custom by the Pope himself. After a brief period of prohibition, tobacco was completely liberalized. It even reached to a point in the mid-20th century that tobacco products were advertised with a picture of babies and with doctors who were telling you how good is it for your health. It took another half century to convince people that tobacco is actually harmful for your health. And now governments increasingly control its use and distribution. Alcohol, one of the most popular drugs in the Western world, was brought under federal prohibition in the United States in 1919. When President Roosevelt decided to legalize it in 1933, it was not because he realized it's not a dangerous substance, but because prohibition created a huge black market feeding violent criminals such as Al Capone. Not so long time ago, in the early 20th century, currently illegal drugs such as opium and cannabis were legal. You could walk into a drugstore and buy them. Soft drinks such as Coca-Cola or Vin Mariani contained cocaine. But by the second half of the 20th century, most countries outlawed the non-medical and non-scientific use of these substances. Why some drugs became illegal was not because of science. It was more because of racial prejudices. For example, the first opium ban in San Francisco was introduced because of the fear of Chinese migrant workers. The first cannabis ban because of the fear of Mexican migrant workers, and the first cocaine ban because of the myths of black people raping white women under the influence of cocaine. The United States of America played an important role in exporting prohibition and framing the international drug control system, marked by three United Nations drug conventions that made the non-scientific and non-medical use of certain substances illegal. Those drugs that were used by Europeans, such as alcohol and tobacco, remained legal, while drugs used by non-European cultures, such as coca leaf, were declared illegal and to be eradicated. But drug prohibition is not a successful system. Watch the next episode of the Just Say No series and you will learn why. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and share this video with your friends.
This is Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We're listening to the Just Say No series by the Rights Reporter Foundation and Drug Reporter. The voice is Peter Cerosi. Now for part three, five reasons why we cannot make the world drug-free.
A drug-free world, we can do it. This was the slogan of the United Nations Drug Summit in 1998, where governments adopted an action plan to eliminate or significantly reduce drug use and drug trafficking. Many world leaders still believe that they can get rid of drugs once and for all. But history teaches us another lesson. In this video, we will present you five arguments why the pursuit of a drug-free world is not only an utter failure, but a harmful experience for humankind. First, drug prohibition simply doesn't work. although it is estimated that $100 billion are spent on drug law enforcement every year, we could not eliminate or even significantly reduce drug use and drug trafficking. According to an explanation given by the experts of the London School of Economics, in a world with constant demand for drugs, the harder you try to suppress the supply, the more lucrative you make the market for criminals. Second, drug prohibition creates a huge black market, the size of which is estimated to be $300 billion every year. This is the single largest illicit market on earth, enriching criminal organizations that are responsible for growing violence across the world. In Mexico, for example, where the government declared a war on drugs in 2006, tens of thousands of innocent people were killed. In some Central American countries, where the murder rate is the highest on earth, illicit drug trafficking is a major factor behind violence. Money generated by illicit drug trafficking is laundered by big banks, increasing inflation and weakening economies. Third, the global war on drugs undermines development and fuels civil wars. Warlords, insurrectionist and terrorist groups are funded by illicit opiate production in Afghanistan and Myanmar. Guerrillas and paramilitary groups profit from illicit cocaine production in Latin America. Cocaine is often smuggled to Europe through West Africa, where poor countries are turned into narco states. Aggressive eradication campaigns could not eliminate drug cultivation in producer countries, but they take away the livelihood of farmers and contribute to deforestation and pollution. Fourth, the global war on drugs leads to human rights violations. 1,000 people are executed every year for drug-related charges in the world. 500,000 people are detained in so-called rehabilitation centers in Southeast Asia, where they are often abused in the name of treatment. The war on drugs fuels mass incarceration in many countries. For example, the United States has 5% of the global population, but 25% of the global prison population. Negative consequences always fall the heaviest on minorities. Afro-American men in the US are sent to prison for drug charges, 13 times the rate of white men. Fifth, criminalization and repression threatens public health and pushes people who use drugs to take more risks. The black market generates ever more potent and risky substances, often cut with contaminants, encouraging high-risk behaviors in unsupervised and unhygienic environments. As a result, Americans are now more likely to die of a drug overdose than in a car accident. Outside of sub-Saharan Africa, the sharing of injecting equipment accounts for one-third of new HIV infections. Criminalization undermines efforts to stop the epidemic. Some people think the idea of a drug-free world is a nice dream like world peace, but they are wrong. This dream turned to be a nightmare. The leaders of the world must quit their dangerous dependence on repression. But what are the alternatives? We will explore them in the next episodes of the Just Say No series. Please share this video with your friends. Stay with us, follow us on Twitter, and like us on Facebook.
Here now is part 4, What is Harm Reduction?
In the latest episode of the Just Say No series, we explained why punitive drug policies don't work. Now we present you an alternative approach to drugs and people who use them, based on the principles of harm reduction. Harm reduction is not only applicable to drugs, but to several other activities involving high risk. For example, it's also harm reduction when you drive a car and you fasten your seatbelt, or when you ride a bicycle and you wear a helmet. Similarly, you can provide people who use drugs with sterile needles and syringes to prevent bloodborne infections such as hepatitis C or HIV. This is called needle exchange. Or you can prescribe opioid medications, such as methadone or even diacetylmorphine, which is the medical form of heroin, to heroin-dependent people to prevent them from buying dangerous drugs in the black market. This is called opiate substitution treatment, and it is not only effective in improving the health and well-being of patients, but also in reducing crime. We can train people how to use naloxone, an antidote that can reverse the effects of heroin overdose, to to save lives. You can test illegal drugs for adulterants to prevent accidental poisoning. This is called drug checking service. We can create hygienic and safer environments where people can use their own drugs with sterile equipment under medical supervision, so we can prevent overdoses and infections. This is called drug consumption room. Harm reduction can not only reduce the negative consequences of drug use itself, but also the harms of repressive drug policies. It's also harm reduction when we mobilize the communities of vulnerable drug users and empower them to fight for their rights. Harm reduction is often contrasted with abstinence and recovery, but that's not true, they are not opposites. For some people, abstinence might be the only right choice, but other people may not be ready or they don't want to quit drug use. Most people who use drugs are not dependent, and dependence is often associated with childhood trauma, social marginalization, and poverty. When you ask a person who lives on the street to quit drug use, it's like asking someone to go to the storm without an umbrella or remove his hat in the desert. Harm reduction is also essential for long-time recovery. These programs reach out drug users on the street, they serve as the first step to other services, therefore they need to be part of an integrated drug treatment system. Harm reduction as a philosophy is based on compassionate pragmatism. This means that we would like to help people where they are at, as fellow citizens in need of help, treating them with respect, without shaming or judging them. Countries that moved away from repressive drug policies and provide a wide access to harm reduction programs to drug users could significantly reduce deaths and suffering related to drugs. In the next episodes of Just Say No, we will provide you examples of how. Stay with us, follow us on the Drug Reporter website, on our Facebook and Twitter channels, and support us so we can do videos like this one.
That was the voice of Peter Cerosi with the Rights Reporter Foundation and Drug Reporter with their Just Say No series. Their videos are posted at YouTube and on their website at drugreporter.net. It's an excellent resource that I highly recommend. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. Now, I was hoping to bring you a couple of interviews this week, but I just couldn't get them onto this week's show, so we'll have those for you next week. Meanwhile, the Commission on Narcotic Drugs met in Vienna for its reconvened 62nd session on December 12th and 13th. This meeting was held in conjunction with the UN's Commission on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice, which was holding its reconvened 28th session. You know, according to the UNODC website, quote, the CND and CCPCJ are functional commissions of the United Nations Economic and Social Council, or ECOSOC, and governing bodies of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, end quote. Loyal listeners will recall that I have long complained that U.S. drug policy is viewed first and foremost as a criminal justice concern. I mean, sure, policymakers have learned to say the right buzzwords. Even drug warriors these days will say that drug use is a health concern and we can't arrest our way out of the drug problems. All true. And yet, the Senate Judiciary Committee still has oversight authority over the U.S. Office on National Drug Control Policy. Similarly, at the international level, responsible for drug policy is handed to UNODC rather than, say, the World Health Organization. I mention this because that's the thing about buzzwords and catchphrases. Anyone can use them. Meanings can sometimes be diluted and even lost. It's called co-option. That's appropriating something or some idea as one's own. When people say, we can't arrest our way out of the drug problem, if they're not really working to stop drug arrests, then they're just bloviating. For the longest time, drug policy reformers were ecstatic when a politician would just avoid calling us out our names and talking bad about our mamas. Then, finally, some politicians started to notice that drug policy reform is more than just a very good idea, the time for which has come. It's popular with people. So they picked up on the buzzwords and the catchphrases, and we celebrated because they were saying the right things. But you know, talk is cheap. Actions are what count. their deeds. And that's my rant for the day. Now, as I climb off my high horse, let's hear a portion of that recent meeting of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs. Here is the president of the International Narcotics Control Board, Kees de Jonkheer.
Just a few weeks ago, at our 126th session, we finalized the INCB annual reports for 2019. And I look forward to presenting these to the Commission in March 2020 and sharing them in advance with the permanent missions in February. Our thematic chapter this year focuses on improving prevention and treatment services for young people. Also at our session, we decided to recommend to the Commission the international control of MAPA, methyl alpha phenyl acetoacetate, a precursor used in the illicit manufacture of amphetamine and methamphetamine. I will brief you more in detail on this matter later under agenda item 9. And I will highlight again also the need for a more encompassing solution to address the continuing emergence of designer precursors used in illicit drug manufacture. The Commission's ministerial declaration of March this year and the 2016 special session of the General Assembly both reaffirmed the centrality of the three conventions to international drug control and the importance of ensuring availability of controlled substances for medical and scientific purposes while preventing their diversion, trafficking, illicit production and manufacture and abuse. INCB continues to engage and redouble its dialogue with member states towards achieving the implementation of the three International Drug Control Convention in what is becoming an increasingly complex environment. In 2019, we had the opportunity to conduct 15 country missions, thanks to the cooperation of governments in accepting our proposed missions and organizing constructive programs. And we greatly appreciate this opportunity to engage more in detail with countries around their national situation on drugs. We were also pleased to meet with civil society representatives during our missions to the countries and here in Vienna, which we've done at the meetings of the Commission for many years, and now also at our May sessions this and last year, a practice that we hope to continue. And equally, we are pleased with the outcome of our open dialogue meetings with member states that we have now held for 2 years during the board's November session. And again, a practice that we look forward to continue. Our last year's supplement expressed our concern about the global imbalance in availability of controlled substances for medical purposes, which still prevails. While some progress is observed, much remains to be done. And we really look forward with UNODC and WHO to further join us in this area that we can together intensify our efforts to improve this situation. Through the INCB learning program, we have trained over 337 people, officials from 88 countries and territories towards improving the regulatory control and reporting related to international trade and internationally controlled substances for medical and scientific purposes. We recently completed, with support of the Russian Federation, a successful training course in Moscow for many of the Russian-speaking countries. Greatly grateful for that. The regional training seminars and national awareness-raising workshops delivered in cooperation with WHO and UNODC are aimed at building capacity and knowledge to improve the availability for medical use while preventing diversion and abuse. The e-learning modules are available for national authorities to use on demand. This area of work is largely funded by extra budgetary contributions for which the board expresses its gratitude. With UNODC, we also established the International Import-Export Authorization System, the I2ES, to facilitate the electronic exchange of import and export authorizations between trading partners. And this should contribute to improving the availability for medical purposes. With increased take-up and use by national authorities of this free-of-charge system, the administrative load associated with paper-based international control requirements will be significantly diminished. And again, INCB Learning and I2ES depend on your active participation as countries and financial support. The INCB pre-export notification, the PEN online system, and the precursors incident communication system, the PICS, as well as the task forces, help governments monitor and control the illicit international movement of precursors. These activities, which have been underway for the past three decades, support governments in implementing the Article 12 of the 1988 Convention, and is largely funded by your extra budgetary contributions, for which again we are very grateful. The INCB Project ION and its ionic system are helping your national authorities address the ongoing emergence of new psychoactive substances. And we are working to address the challenge posed by the non-medical synthetic opioids. And I look forward to your continued collaboration in these areas. In closing, allow me to say that the international community can feel proud of its achievements in agreeing to and implementing to the three international drug control conventions. Yet, we should also be concerned about the mounting new challenges that we're all facing. The emergence of the new classes of synthetic drugs that are changing the world drug landscape. The enormous illegal drug market and the links with organized crime. The role of dark web and internet purchasing, but also the developments on legalizing cannabis for non-medical use, on which the board has repeatedly indicated that this is not in line with the conventions. As the international community just celebrated World AIDS Day and the World Human Rights Day, I also want to stress that actions carried out in the name of drug control must not violate human rights. In our 2019 annual report, WHO reiterates the importance of ensuring that drug control efforts fully respect human rights. We again urge the immediate cessation of extrajudicial actions against suspected drug-related behavior, and again call on countries that maintain capital punishment for related drug offenses to consider abolishing that. Any drug control activity that violates human rights also violates the drug control conventions. With that, I thank you. I wish you a very fruitful meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That was Kees de Jonkheer, President of the INCB, addressing the reconvened 62nd session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs, which met in Vienna December 12th and 13th. And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at drugtruth.net. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. The executive producer of the Drug Truth Network is Dean Becker. Drug Truth Network programs, including this show, Century of Lies, as well as our flagship show, Cultural Baggage, and of course, our daily 420 Drug War News segments, are all available by podcast. The URLs to subscribe are on the network homepage at drugtruth.net. The Drug Truth Network has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. Drug War Facts is on Facebook, too. Give its page a like. Share it with friends. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, for the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.